Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. It seems that for almost as long as policymakers have been talking about the idea of carbon offsets as a way for businesses and consumers to compensate for their greenhouse gas emissions, we've been talking about ways to reward farmers for taking and keeping surplus carbon out of the air. Carbon credit systems have certainly been proposed. I even remember some discussion over whether farmers could really claim to own that carbon or whether it became an issue of mineral rights once it was back in the ground. Anyway, once you count the price Ottawa has put on the carbon that farmers add back into the atmosphere, that is the new carbon tax, a carbon market for Canadian farmers seems to have yet to materialize, and now there's a chance that our U.S. neighbors could get way out ahead on that action. John Greek is the editor of FarmTerio. He's been writing about whether farmers across Canada stand a chance at a payday for their carbon sequestration, and he's on the line. John, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Thanks, Dave.
Now, let's start with the principle behind carbon credits for those who might not remember. You know, clearly, there are practices that allow farmers to legitimately say they're taking more carbon out of the air than they're putting in.
Sure. The idea is that growing crops that create green matter will sequester carbon, because essentially they're taking carbon and they're growing carbon based on photosynthesis, of course, and then also pulling carbon through from the air, especially through the use of carbon dioxide. And then the idea is eventually that carbon ends up in the ground, whether it's from the decomposition of the plant or the root system, and then farmers who essentially grow carbon should get some credit for that, especially as you mentioned with the carbon tax, a lot of farmers are not all that excited that they're having to pay the tax when they believe they should also be getting a credit.
Mm-hmm. Now, the practices that allow farmers to sequester carbon, they don't necessarily lead to the same results right across Canada, do they?
No, and this is really the problem, then the challenge, I guess, with carbon credits is that it's a very imprecise science. It's when you deal with very complex biological systems in many different climates and under different production practices, it's very hard to make blanket statements. The example is that the extensive use of no-till in Western Canada, based on the soils and the climate there, a bit more of an arid climate, the expectation is there is significant carbon that is sequestered in soils in Western Canada because of the use of no-till. However, the research has shown in Ontario or in other climates that are more moist, that no-till itself doesn't necessarily result in significant carbon sequestration. However, they do find that other practices in Ontario can do that, including a more extensive crop rotation and the use of cover crops.
Mm-hmm. And in your feature in FarmTerio, it sounds like the practicality of carbon sequestration itself isn't necessarily settled either.
Yeah, that's the other real challenge is how do you measure the sequestration of carbon? And there's still significant debate over that. There's some companies that have tried to come up with methods and technology to do that, but there is really no good one rule yet on how to how to measure it, and then the practicality of who measures that. At what point do you measure that? Does every farmer have to measure what? Have to measure each acre? Have to measure each 1,000 acres? And then how do you report that? So it could become a significant bureaucratic challenge.
And also there's philosophically, there's the idea that a carbon credit system, you know, rewards farmers who are starting from low organic matter in their soils, for instance, you know, while the farmers who've been showing their work all along and doing and carrying out these practices that allow them to sequester this carbon, you know, that they don't necessarily have as much to gain from a carbon credit system as those who were sort of relatively late to the game.
That's correct. And I understand that that's the challenge in making the argument to government. Farmers who have been good carbon stewards for, you know, years, you actually stand to gain less. And, you know, those are the people that you want to reward. But government programs really are focused on and really have to show for justification a rate of change. And so that's, you know, the issue. And then, you know, the farmers who do a good job, if they currently have degraded soils and then they do a good job in 10 years, do they then just not get a credit because they've done a good job? So I think that's another, you know, practical and political challenge.
Mm-hmm. And all that aside, you know, where you are in Ontario, there actually had been work underway not that long ago to create a carbon credit system that included agriculture. Now what happened there?
When the previous Liberal government was in power, they created a cap and trade system for carbon credits, which is essentially like a carbon tax under a different structure. They were elected, when the Conservative government was elected, they got rid of the cap and trade system, and now in Ontario we are under the federal system, although the provincial government is working on something here. However, the Liberal government had looked at and had a process in place to find ways to reward people with carbon credits, and certainly agriculture was part of that process. So that's been lost now. But the bottom line also is we're part of the federal system, and there's no good mechanism there to reward average farmers for their carbon credits. So it's that's what irks a lot of people is, you know, you end up being taxed on one side before the mechanisms are even created to give you a benefit on the other. And when you look at environmental taxation, you know, goals at changing the market, they always say, well, if you're going to penalize somebody on one side, you need to give an incentive to the people that are doing the practices that you consider good. And currently in Canada, other than Alberta, there is a bit of a carbon credit market in Alberta for farmers. That really hasn't happened, and that's why you hear so much frustration from farmers.
Mm-hmm. Now, there have been other models to reward broader sustainable farming practices that, you know, they have made some progress in Canada. The whole environmental goods and services principle, the ALUS, ALUS, the alternative land use services model, rather than straight up carbon credits. Now, what's the difference there?
And that's how a lot of the thinkers on this have come to believe this. That's how farmers can get some sort of benefit from this is for broader, you know, saying, you know, versus saying you've sequestered X amount of carbon per acre, which is, I think is just really almost impossible to measure on a broad national scale. That there's a certain number of practices in a certain jurisdiction that can be an incentive to encourage farmers to use. So, and I think that's probably the way it'll go if we can actually get to that point on a broad scale.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the idea of a carbon credit, though, a straight up carbon credit, has already got a toehold down in the States. Now, where are they? Where's Washington? Where are the states on actually making that happen?
So they're further on than they ever have been. And it's interesting that this is a process that's moving through Congress in a bipartisan way, meaning the bill is sponsored by both Democrats and Republicans, which is a rare thing. And it's, they're part way through it. And there's a lot of head scratching about whether this will actually ever, you know, come to fruition. We've discussed previously, it's a complicated thing to measure, but there's some significant players behind it, whether it's large companies that are trying to be able to show results in their sustainability reports, large farmer groups, some of the large farming companies that are behind this as well. But the trick is, and quite honestly, I've read spots that have said that this is the real reason they're trying to do this is to get another subsidy for farmers And that's not necessarily the real goal for these sorts of things. Shouldn't necessarily just be to get a subsidy to the farmers. So and it's an environmentally activist acceptable way to try to get more subsidies to American farmers. And of course the concern is then they would have that subsidy which Canadian farmers do not.
Mm-hmm. Now, it'll be obvious to anyone listening that we've hit some technical difficulties here, but one last question, John. Is the U.S. proposal for carbon credits likely to survive past November?
Well, that's a very good question. These kind of bipartisan things do tend to have a point at which they tend to devolve, but, I'm really not sure, because November's not that far away, and these sorts of things take a long time to move through with the American system. But if it doesn't get implemented before the election, it likely will be a long time before you see it again. So that's really the question. I don't think we know yet. But if it is implemented, it would be even more of a concern for Canadian farmers if that happens before November.
Mm-hmm. So as down there, as with up here, I guess it's a question of the political will to make it happen, and I guess we'll see. John, thanks very much for your time.
No problem. Take care.
John Greig is the editor of Farmtario. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Well, Western Canada's big outdoor farm show of the summer has made the move from the wide open spaces to cyberspace, and you'll be able to see for yourselves how that happened next week when Glacier Farm Media's first online show of the year, Ag in Motion Discovery Plus, kicks off Tuesday, July 21st, running to the 25th. Pre-show viewing opened just this last Saturday, and here to talk right now about what you can expect, we have show director Rob O'Connor. Rob, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Thanks for having me.
Now, with the show coming up next week, first I have to ask, what's this experience been like for you as the director?
Well, it's been an amazing experience, to be honest. I mean, in such a short amount of time, the team came together to create this great product. I think the Discovery Plus program really does help fill that need for farmers to search out new innovation and technology and look at some of the new systems that are coming out to help improve their operation, and it also gives the opportunity for those ag suppliers to give them a platform to reach out en masse where they just are missing that because we don't get the chance to have Ag in Motion or, for that matter, any of the other large trade shows that we would have in the agriculture industry.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the response been like from the exhibitors? I imagine this is still a bit different from what they expected when they signed up for it, back before the pandemic began. Everybody's had to be adaptable, I guess.
Yeah, I think COVID-19 has certainly made people switch gears and learn some new skills and see some new ways of getting their message out. And I think for a lot of companies, it was a lot of learning opportunities for them. I think some met this challenge a little quicker than others, but with Ag in Motion Discovery Plus, we have over 170 companies that are participating, which I think exceeded our expectation. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how the interaction next week between the farmers and those ag companies work. The platform itself has about 240 different sessions. And I think that's going to be the catalyst that really creates that connectivity between the farmers and the ag companies.
And I'm seeing some pretty impressive speakers and panels and even some musical entertainment lined up. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, I think, there's a great variety of different speakers and topics that are there. Some of it are production related, some are management related, some are livestock related. And of course, as you'd mentioned, the STARS fundraising concert, it's virtual and part of this platform as well. I really think that we do a great job offering a cross-section of topics and speakers that I think will be beneficial for farmers across the board in the Prairie Provinces.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got the website open on another window back here, and it looks like there's incentives for farmers not just to just sort of dip in and out, but to really get into the show and look around.
Yeah, certainly right off when you register for Ag in Motion Discovery Plus, you'll be entered to win the fuel tank and some fuel to fill it, which I think is a great prize just for participating. but there's also the opportunity to purchase a swag box, which is the different types of premiums that a company would give out during the live show. They've all, or a group of them, have put different items together in this box, so a farmer can take the opportunity to purchase into that program, and part of the proceeds will go to STARS as far as a fundraising event. But it gives that feel, that physical touch point back to the farmers that they might be missing because we don't have a live show. And then there's other things that go through, like several of the companies do have show specials. There's actually a specific tab in the event itself that is takes you directly to the show specials. So as you travel through the virtual show, you'll be able to look at the different things that are being promoted and offered at a special price because of the Ag Emotion Discovery Plus venue.
So it sounds like there's a lot that farmers can get out of it, even if they don't get their 10 or 20,000 steps in. So just to recap, if I'm a farmer or an interested third party, what do I have to do to get into the online show?
Well, it's really quite easy to get into it. You just have to go to the agandmotion.ca website page, and it will direct you to the new platform. You just have to answer a few very simple questions, and then you're granted access to the platform, and it's free of charge. So it's not like you're putting something out there and wondering if you're going to get value. This is a great opportunity for farmers to engage with over 170 companies, listen to 240 different sessions. I think over that 5-day period, there's a lot of opportunities for farmers and ag companies to work towards improving the industry.
And I'll be looking forward to logging in. Rob, thanks very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thanks for doing a great job.
Rob O'Connor is director of Ag in Motion Discovery Plus, which runs online next week from July 21st to 25th at aginmotion.ca. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Well, we have the acreage reports in for both Canada and the U.S., and grain traders seem to have turned their fancies and thoughts now from acres to potential bushels per acre. Here to discuss the grain trade's current focus is Phil Friends-Workington from Glacier Markets Farm. Phil, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
So, obviously, now we've got the numbers in from Stats Canada. We've got projections in from the States as well, as far as how many acres seem to be going into the ground. Obviously, we're fairly confident now in how many acres are actually out there. So the idea seems to have turned now to what we can potentially see from those acres this year.
Yeah, it's that time of year where it's all about the weather, and the forecasts from day to day or from hour to hour even are what's driving the markets. So we're kind of in the southern Manitoba bubble. It's been a fairly decent year, all things considered, in kind of the Winnipeg, southern Manitoba area. But there are, to the western prairies, there's been too much moisture and some issues with that. And in the States, it's been a generally decent as well, but they've had kind of ups and downs, and prices have some hot dry weather recently gave a boost to prices, but now the forecasts are looking a bit wetter again. So rain makes grain, as they always say. So that's depending on where the rains hit and whatnot, it's all about the weather and what that will mean for the crops going forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the canola markets are concerned, you've got a combination then of the weather up here plus however the weather is affecting the soy markets down in the States. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. So at the end of the day, canola is the small player, and our weather will have will have an effect on prices, definitely. But the soybean market is kind of the big player in the world oilseed markets, and what happens there will definitely influence the canola market as well.
So what are the canola charts telling us right now?
Yeah, so the in addition to the weather, the charts, the technical signals are also coming to play. So looking at the November contract, it spent most of July sort of trending higher, and that was in sympathy with soybeans and based off of a bit of weather concerns and a lot of short covering. So traders had big short bets in the market, so they're, you know, betting that prices will go down. They've been covering those, so that's making prices go up. But looking at the charts, it's kind of run into resistance at the high end. The last week, the November was trading above $480 per ton, and that was kind of the first time since April that it kind of moved above that sort of psychological trend line resistance. Back yesterday, Monday, we're recording Tuesday, so Monday it fell right down and was below that mark again. But on the next day, it's back up, kind of testing that resistance level, settling just a bit below 480 today. So that's kind of like a tipping point right now. Will it be able to break out and go higher? And then, you know, next targets are like 490, or could 500 is much farther away. 485, 490 is a bigger test. But, you know, it's kind of at that tipping point now. Will it break higher? Or if it drops down, it's got $10, $20 to the downside in the kind of 465-ish area.
Mm-hmm. But nobody's made any bets yet on whether it's going to punch through that ceiling.
No, because it's the middle of July, and people are there's fewer people in the markets. They're there, but people are it is a bit quieter time with less participation, but at the same time, the weather will shift from day to day, and that the kind of big spec money is kind of watching for flows there.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll like tip it one way or the other, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it'll take, a weather event to tip it.
Yeah. And I can't let you go without discussing wheat first. That there's obviously been some action in the markets there, not so much necessarily with what's been happening with wheat in Canada or even the States, but certainly in other wheat exporting markets overseas, we're seeing some lively weather conditions there that are cause for concern.
Yeah, the Europe, Black Sea, Russia area. I've been seeing some reports out of there where the declining production estimates, and that has mainly due to heat and dryness, I believe, and that mm-hmm. has definitely propped up North American wheat prices. At the same time, kind of a limiting factor is the U.S. harvest. The winter wheat is in the middle of its harvest or nearing the late stage. The latest USDA numbers, about two-thirds of their winter wheat is off, so that's kind of seasonal harvest pressure limiting things a bit. But the weather issues in Europe, Black Sea, that's definitely getting some play in the markets here, and kind of an underpinning factor to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly something we'll keep an eye on. Phil, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Phil Frantz-Workington writes for Glacier Markets Farm in Winnipeg. Thanks for listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. We'll be back in another week with more from the Glacier Farm Media family of publications.
Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert, Canada's number one field and accounting software. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.